Much Ado About Budgeting, next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to the Saturday edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principled Policy. And along with me today is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst and very good friend, Chuck Michaelis.
Great to be back with you again, Barry. And this is really a continuation of yesterday's discussion, since we had big plans to play an audio and you and I started talking. And that's what happens when we don't make an entire week worth of shows. We have things to discuss and we run out of time with a 15-minute program.
Well, so we don't have that situation happen today. Let's just go ahead and lead into this audio. Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking about the whole sequestration debate, debacle, fight, whatever you want to call it, that's going on in Congress right now. And basically, for those of you who may not really be paying a lot of attention to that, sequestration is the idea that after a certain date, we're going to start reducing the amount of growth in certain areas of the federal budget. And one of the areas that looks like it's leaning toward cuts and that everybody's all up in arms and upset about is in military spending. Well, there are many ways of getting around that, and I'm sure that our Congress people are looking at those various ways, not to get around the cuts in military spending, but to just get around cuts at all.
Yes, that's right.
And you know what, Chuck? Here's the kicker. There are no cuts.
Well, that's right.
Because what sequestration does is it reduces the projected growth in the spending that they're going to do. You see, they forecast out how much more money they want to spend in Congress on various, you know, for various programs and agencies, and then consider that if you tell them, no, you can't grow your spending that much, but you can only grow it by this much, that is a cut, and somehow it's going to harm all of the good, and I put that in quotes, Chuck, the word good, that the government can do for the people.
Well, I'm taking this from a website called uneditedpolitics.com, and it's a place where a number of speeches and interviews and things are gathered. And they have posted something from a CNN website. And I'm going to embed this if I can figure out how to do that on our website. But it's very interesting. It's entitled Rand Paul to Obama, Do the Right Thing. And underneath it says Senator Rand Paul, who voted against the forced spending cuts, talks about the March 1st deadline and the consequences. Now, pay close attention to the interview, and you'll find out why Rand Paul voted against the so-called spending cuts.
Senator, the president spoke today about those forced budget cuts. He had some pretty tough words for Republicans. Let me play a little bit of what he said. Get your reaction. Listen to this.
So now Republicans in Congress face a simple choice. Are they willing to compromise to protect vital investments in education and healthcare and national security and all the jobs that depend on them? Or would they rather put hundreds of thousands of jobs and our entire economy at risk just to protect a few special interest tax loopholes that benefit only the wealthiest Americans and biggest corporations? That's the choice.
All right, you heard the president lay out the choice. Are you willing to compromise on the way he described
it? I'm not really willing to discuss it in the framework that he's made up for himself. I mean, for goodness sakes, it was his proposal. You know, he proposed the sequester. It was his idea. He signed it into law. And now he's going to tell us that, it's all our fault. I voted against the sequester because I didn't think it was enough. The sequester cuts the rate of growth of spending, but the sequester doesn't even really begin to cut spending, which we have to do, or we're going to get a credit downgrade, another credit downgrade.
So you don't think that the $85 billion this year, that would be the forced cuts this year, that from your perspective, that's not enough?
It's a pittance. I mean, it's a slowdown in the rate of growth. There are no real cuts happening over 10 years. Over 10 years, the budget will still grow $7 to $8 trillion. He added $6 trillion to the debt in his first term. He's on course to add another $4 to $6 trillion in his second term. So really, this is even just the really nibbling at the edges, and he's saying, oh, it's some dramatic thing where all of a sudden it's still the rich's fault. Didn't he already raise taxes on the rich? I have trouble even understanding what he's talking about, because he sets up this rhetoric and this sort of game of let's go get the rich again that really is divorced from any reality. It's his sequester we're talking about, his bill.
But as you know, a lot of your fellow Republicans complain bitterly about the proposed defense cuts in these forced budget cuts, if you will. Already there were $500 billion in cuts last year. They say they can't stand anymore. National security is on the line. So what do you say to your fellow Republicans right now who say no more defense cuts?
We spend 47% of the total world spending on military. We spend more than the next 14 countries combined. Now, I'm a big national defense guy. I think it's the most important thing we do in Washington is national defense, but I do think there's room for cutting.
When you gave the Tea Party response to the president's State of the Union address last week, you proposed some solutions to the deficit crisis. You said you would start with cutting foreign aid to countries that, quote, are burning our flag and chanting death to America. Senator, we're talking about countries, I think you'd agree, Pakistan, Yemen, Lebanon, Afghanistan, according to these reports. But are they really realistic to start cutting economic aid or foreign aid to these countries where the U.S. needs their assistance to a certain degree in fighting terror?
I think until Pakistan steps up and says that we're not going to tolerate people who would kill someone like the little girl Malala that was shot point blank in the head, who survived, but is such a wonderful, sweet voice for girls to get educated in Pakistan. Boy, Pakistan, we shouldn't have to pay Pakistan to stand up and for them to eradicate people who would shoot little girls.
What's the likelihood, bottom line, Senator, that Congress will agree on avoiding these forced budget cuts by March 1st, especially given the fact that there's the Senate, for example, is on recess this week? What's going to happen March 1st?
I think the sequester happens, and it'll be in some ways a yawn, because the histrionics that are coming from the president saying, oh, we're going to shut down and get rid of meat inspectors. I mean, is anybody not going to stand up and call his bluff on that ridiculousness? The budgets are not being decreased. We're talking about cutting the rate of growth of budgets. And he has the ability to spend the money in different places. If not, we should give latitude to do it. But the thing is that there is waste throughout government, and the cuts in the rate of growth should not have us laying off FAA, air traffic controllers and meat inspectors. This is the emotionalism that's always used to argue against any cuts. This is not enough cuts. So we shouldn't be, if we get rid of this, it just shows that we're really not serious as a nation about doing anything about our debt crisis. So I would say to the president, stand up and do the right thing and don't ask us to squeeze more money out of the private sector, which we think is bad for jobs, in order for you to do the right thing. Why doesn't he stand up and be a leader and just do the right thing?
I'm assuming that was kind of a redundant question. Yes. At the end there.
it was a rhetorical question.
Rhetorical question. Yes, why doesn't he? Well, we don't have time on an hour program to go into all the reasons why he's not doing that.
No. In fact, I think we've been talking about that now for over 2 years.
I believe you're correct.
going on 2 years now, I guess.
Unfortunately, I believe you're correct.
Well, I think that was the pivotal question. Why do we have to do this? The other thing was, Wolf Blitzer does what the media does best. They let the president set up a false dichotomy, and then they say, well, this here it is. False either or. Either this or that. Well, the other answer is neither.
None of the above.
Yeah,
that's right.
Neither. And Paul knows that.
Well, and I appreciated the fact that he immediately didn't go into that trap. And he said, you know, I'm not going to use the terms and the framework that the president's giving us because it's ridiculous. We're not cutting anything. We're not going to lose anything. All we're doing is reducing the rate of growth. Chuck, we're still spending more money. We'll spend more money the day after the sequester started than we spent the day before.
Exactly. That's the dumb part of this. And what folks out there, you in radio land and in podcast land, need to understand if you don't already. Now, in some cases, I know, Barry, you and I are preaching to the choir on this. But there are people out there listening who really have bought into this rhetoric that this giant sky is falling. The earth is all going to stand still. We're all going to catch fire and all the children will be killed. As someone very cleverly put it the other day, the conservative puppy eaters will hold sway and all these rich people will come in and raid the coffers in Washington, D.C. Well, it's an absurdity because more money will be spent on the day after the sequestration, as you said, than was spent the day before.
That's it. And, you know, Chuck, this is what we get down to, because what's happening is the president is demagoguing this issue, and it's an issue that he created. Now, I'm not blaming him, though, Chuck. I'm just going to say that right now. And ladies and gentlemen, we shouldn't blame Barack Obama for this problem either.
No.
The entire blame for this mess that we're now in and this debacle of a fight should be laid squarely in the lap of one John Boehner, Speaker of the House, who, when a budget was brought before them, blinked.
Yep.
And we can blame Harry Reid in the Senate. Oh, they won't pass the budget. They won't pass the budget. Well, that's perfectly fine. Then do the next responsible thing. And Chuck, I guess in John Boehner's world, the next responsible thing is, oh, pass temporary spending measures. Because we got to keep government running, whatever we do. I remember back when, and I hate to say it, back when Newt Gingrich was Speaker, we shut federal government agencies down.
And you know what? One of the problems is they think that that was a defeat. Republicans think that was a defeat. And in fact, what they proved was we can do without a whole bunch of stuff.
And that, I think, is what really scares them, because if we can do without a whole bunch of stuff, that means we could do without a whole bunch of laws, rules, and regulations that has to be there to prop up and support that stuff. Therefore, maybe we don't need all of those legislators sitting around in D.C. year in and year out doing nothing but causing problems.
And I think Paul did a very good job when he was asked a sort of a gotcha question about these payments to in foreign aid to some of these countries, and also on the defense spending. Well, first of all, why are we bribing countries to not murder little girls who want to go to school? Why are we bribing countries to not burn our flag? Why are we bribing countries, and they do it anyway, why are we bribing countries to show us respect when, in fact, really the only thing they respect is a check? They don't respect us. And, in fact, I would say, and I'll probably get kicked for this, how are we earning their respect? Are we earning their respect by going in and creating these problems internally for those nations? You know, the Middle East has long had, especially in areas like Afghanistan, have long had situations where they have, if there's a conqueror in the country, the leadership, the elders of the community will go in and make it look like they're cooperating. And they cooperate and they cooperate and cooperate until they see an opening. Then they kill everybody in sight. This is exactly what's going on. They don't really want us there. They're more, they say we can last longer than you can. And they proved that they can do that with the Russians, if you recall.
Yes.
1979 yes. through what? 1987 or so, something like that. And the Russians just said, okay, this is not going to happen. And they left. And they're just sitting there saying, and in the meantime, what was the United States doing? They were creating al-Qaeda by giving weapons and money to the Mujahideen to fight off the Russians, playing Cold War.
Exactly. And there's an interesting movie about that whole thing. It's called Charlie Wilson's War,
yeah.
Now, granted, ladies and gentlemen, it's a little raw, and the language and some of the things in it are a little rough. But all in all, it's kind of an interesting encapsulation of how foreign policy worked during that time period.
Well, it's interesting, too, that Rand Paul's father, Ron Paul, got such flack for stating the obvious, and that is exactly what the 9/11 Commission said, and the CIA itself has said, that 9/11 was due to blowback from Middle Eastern policy that's been going on since at least the 1950s. And in fact, probably earlier than that, because we were considered allies of Britain, and Britain has been involved in meddling in Middle Eastern affairs since World War I. So the fact is that we need to rethink a number of policies, and one of the things we need to rethink is sending money hand over fist to people who don't like us, because we're not going to buy their loyalty.
Well, it's interesting you say that, Chuck, because that's kind of the argument that's being made right now here at the state level with Governor Kasich and his proposed, we got to go after all this Medicaid money that's sitting out there. I think it's $18 billion. Well, we just got to get that from the feds. Now, don't worry, when they go to tighten the strings around our necks, well, we'll turn off the tap. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, again, and a part of the reason of that is it's an election cycle. And, of course, you know, if you're going to spend money, you're hoping that who you're spending the money on, that it will make them all warm and fuzzy towards you, and therefore you'll get their votes. Well, Congress is doing the same thing.
Yeah, exactly. People can't recognize, people in state government can't recognize that the same games that they're playing at the state level are being played at the federal level, except that the stakes are higher.
Well, I think they realize that. I think that they think for some reason they can get out from under the consequences of those stakes.
Well, this reminds me of what's going on with this constitutional convention issue. You know, you and I are getting ready to preparing testimony in opposition to HJR3, which is another call, fifth year in a row that I can think of, to call a constitutional amendment for the purpose of getting a balanced budget. And I've testified every time I've gotten the chance, the problem is not with the Constitution. It's not the fact that we don't have a balanced budget amendment. If you read the Constitution, a balanced budget is virtually a requirement to operate in the way that they are supposed to do it. In any case, the problem is not with the Constitution. It's with you guys in the State House who keep getting yourselves elected from the State House into Congress, and you suddenly go from the guy who has to watch over the state budget and is very jealous of all these state things. All of a sudden, you're like a kid in a candy store when you get over there, and it's like, spend, 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 and get reelected. That's the problem, and it has nothing to do with a balanced budget amendment. It has to do with the character of the men that we're sending to Washington, D.C.
Well, and there's that, too. And I always laughed because, number one, you know, they're complaining about how Congress won't do this and Congress won't do that, but from the state legislative perspective. But if you take a look, and I've pulled it up here, and I'm not going to count our senators. I'm just going to count our congressmen, of how many of our congressmen were former state legislators. I've got Joyce Beatty, Jim Jordan, Bob Latta, Bob Gibbs, let's see here, Pat Tiberi, Tim Ryan, Steve Stivers. Chuck, right there, just on a quick read, out of 16, 7 of the 16 were former legislators. Oh, wait a minute, I forgot one, John Boehner.
Yeah,
okay,
yeah,
hey,
exactly.
That's right. So, so basically, the vast majority of those members of Congress were in the state legislature. So, for some reason, our state legislators, and with HDR, thinks that, well, Congress can't control spending. They won't balance the budget. But we can force them to do it. Well, aren't we part of those delegations to Congress? I'm assuming that Ohio is not a unique outlier in that the majority of our congressional delegation are former state legislators. I'm sure we're not the only state where that's
oh, well, how can
matter of fact, yeah. There may not be too many states, except for maybe those ones that only have
one congressman, yeah.
Where it isn't the case. So if that's the case, and all these and they should be so worried about their states, why aren't they getting it done? Why do we have to call for a constitutional convention to pass an amendment to the Constitution to tell Congress you must balance the budget? Now, and this one's obviously, as we've read it, has got a little J-hook to it that, well, okay, we'll allow you to start with 105% of your current spending. So yeah, we're allowing you to bust the budget already. But if you want to go beyond that, you have to come and get the approval of 2/3 of the legislatures of the states. Well, you and I kind of laughed about that one because inherently that's unconstitutional in the framework of our current Constitution.
Yeah.
But if they don't trust them after they leave the legislature and go to Congress to do the right thing, what makes them think that they're going to follow this amendment?
Well, that's the entire question. The answer is they're not going to follow it. They're going to find an end around.
Well, there's always emergency clause. And there's emergency clause in this as well.
Exactly.
That, you know, in the event of, you know, some exigency that we just can't foresee or national emergency, well, then, okay, you're fine to go ahead and spend your heart's desire.
Well, here's the bad part about that. You know what the dumb part? I don't blame people who don't know this because it's been kept pretty quiet. We've been in a state of emergency since 9/11.
Well, yeah. Well, and honestly, if you go into any kind of government building, you'll remember that because they'll have a sign out there that says our threat level is, and it'll have That's some right. color associated with it.
And that we are in an official state of emergency and we have been now since
2001.
Since 2001. So for 12 years.
Almost 12 years, we have been in an ongoing, quote-unquote, state of emergency. It's just that the levels change. So, ladies and gentlemen, the real kicker behind this thing is, if we've given an exemption that they don't have to follow this balanced budget amendment in times of emergency, they won't ever have to follow this balanced budget amendment, Chuck, because we'll always have a state of emergency of some form or the other, whether it's based on 9/11 or if it's based on school shootings. Maybe we do a national emergency and shut everything down for school shootings. Or maybe we do a national emergency when we hear bad economic news coming out of Asian countries, because everybody's now wringing their hands and worried about what China is going to do as far as the bonds that they hold against the United States. Or what about Germany wanting half of their gold reserves back?
Yeah.
Would that create a national emergency?
It depends on how much of our own gold reserves are stuck still in Fort Knox, which nobody knows.
We have reserves?
Yeah, supposedly.
Are you sure about that?
Well, okay, think about this.
Okay.
Think about this for a second. Now, don't be alarmed, ladies and gentlemen, those of you invested in gold. This happens every year about this time. But the price of gold is taking a dip.
Of course
it is. It's down $100 based on the idea that the Fed is going to, quote unquote, tighten things. Don't buy into that, ladies and gentlemen. That news means nothing. And the dip in the price of gold is probably from sell-off from countries who are manipulating the gold market in order to get people to sell it so they can buy it up.
Well, I'm telling you right now, I'm going to go the other direction, Charles. I think if I can put this money together, I'm going to go buy.
Yeah, exactly.
This is a great time when it starts going down. It's a good time to start picking up because I'll guarantee you it's going to go back up.
Well, the last time I heard that we'd reached the long peak, it was at $1,000.
And right now, today's close, I'm reading, well, this is on Friday's close, $1,577 an ounce
right.
for gold. And well, that was, it's dropped almost $30 since Wednesday.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, fine. Okay. Gold's dropping. So we got to get out of gold, right? No.
Now's the time to buy.
Get into gold.
Because it's getting ready to skyrocket.
So, you know, but that's the whole point is, Chuck, is everything that government tells you to do economically is counterintuitive. You know, they're saying, oh, you're cutting us when we're actually growing government spending. But the point is, people hear what government says, and if you believe it, or you believe how the mainstream media is pushing it, well, everything's just horrible, and it's just all how bad. Oh, we can't cut. Look at these people who are going to be laid off over at the Defense Center because of sequestration.
Yeah.
But the point is that no, folks. It's just that they're not going to get their automatic step increases in their union contracts if we hold off the rate of growth.
Well, did you hear Leon Panetta yesterday basically informed Leon Panetta is the Secretary of Defense. He informed Congress yesterday that they were going to be laying off something like 800,000 civilian employees if the sequestration took hold. Well, what are you going to do with all the money you got left over from the from your budget increase?
Yeah, exactly.
Look, this is scaremongering. Would people be laid off? I'd be willing to bet that they are. But it's a dog and pony show.
Well, but the point is, Chuck, those things work because these politicians know the media are going to pick up and they're going to be the echo chamber. All we have to do is throw the meme out there and use this phrasing, and they'll pick up on it, and they'll repeat it over and over and over again. And we use the scare terms like layoffs and cutting budgets and having to cut social programs and not being able to provide health care. The list goes on and on and on and on.
Yeah. Well, think about what Rand Paul said as well when he was asked about the cuts in the automatic cuts in the military. He says, look, we spend 47% of the world's budget. The world spends 47% of their budgets on military spending. The United States spends 14 times what anybody else does. Really, why is our national security in any kind of danger when we're spending 14 times what everybody else does? I mean, we've got federal government just ordered enough bullets to kill everybody in the world over twice, I think. Something like 16 billion rounds.
I forget how many it was, but you're right. But the point is, Chuck, that's because they really understand that there's no real way they're going to get a gun ban through Congress.
Oh, that's, yeah.
You know, groups, you know, and they'll say the NRA is responsible for it, but it's mainly groups like Gun Owners of America who are doing a real right. job and getting some of these congressmen to understand the real terms of this debate. And they know they can't get Feinstein's gun ban bill through. So, well, if we can't ban the guns, we'll just dry up all the supply of ammunition. If you can't get ammo for your guns, they're not worth much, are they? They're
no.
good clubs.
But that's exactly why a couple of companies have basically canceled all orders from the federal and state governments who are clamping down on guns and said, we're not going to supply you.
Bravo.
More power to them, because you can sell it to the private sector and we'll even pay more than they will, because you know that they have a minimum price that they demand on those contracts. I'll pay more than the feds will for 1,000 rounds of 30-06.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, why would they buy 30-06? It's an obsolete load.
Yeah, really, it is.
You know, 9mm? You bet. 45? Uh-huh. I'll pay more. I'll pay more than the feds will. No problem. But the fact is you are absolutely correct. This is a backdoor ban. Basically, they're going to leave us with lances and hammers, because we won't be able to get ammo for them. If you can't feed the beast, it dies.
That's right.
So essentially, your 45 will be reduced to a handheld self-defense device, and your rifle will become essentially something you can attach a bayonet to and use it as a spear.
Yeah. Now, I just to give our – in case our listeners didn't catch this, I'm going to read this. This is coming from a website called Godfather Politics. Kind of like this one, godfatherpolitics.com, talking about the gun control laws in New York State. What we know is that the state legislature in New York basically passed all but a complete ban of any citizen in the state of New York being – able to legally own or carry a private firearm. Well, in this article it says the gun control laws in New York are so strict that Texas Attorney General Greg Abbott used state funds to run ads in New York City and Albany telling New York gun owners to move to Texas, where their Second Amendment rights are protected by the state. Now, I think that's a good way of getting an influx of citizens. That's a great idea. But what you were talking about earlier, York Arms is a firearms manufacturer located in Maine. Now, they make custom firearms, mm-hmm. Charles.
Yeah.
And they're one of their biggest clients, the New York City Police Department. Now, remember, they make custom arms.
Why is the New York City Police Department not using standard issue Smith & Wesson 9mm?
It's a good question, but... here's what York Arms stated, and they released this on Valentine's Day, so last week. It says, quote, based on the recent legislation in New York, we are prohibited from selling rifles and receivers to residents of New York. We have chosen to extend that prohibition to all governmental agencies associated with or located within New York. So in other words, if it's a federal or a state or a local agency in New York State, York Arms says, forget it. We're not going to supply you anymore. As a result, the release goes on, we have halted sales of rifles, short-barreled shotguns, machine guns, and silencers to New York governmental agencies. For civilian customers residing in New York, at your choice, we will A, complete your order and ship to a dealer of your choice outside of New York, or B, refund your payment in full. Now, that's great. You could ship it out to New Jersey and get your gun.
Sure. Ship it to a federal firearms dealer in New Jersey. Once it's picked up in New Jersey, it's picked up.
It's picked up. That's right. Or and they give another option. You will hold your items here at their facility
in Maine
for up to 6 months at no charge. if you are in the process of leaving New York and taking residence in another state. In other words, we'll hold it for you till you get settled in your new digs outside the state of New York. And for their law enforcement and government customers in New York, your orders have been canceled. That was in their press release. So guess what, ladies and gentlemen? Here's one company that understands liberty.
Yes.
That understands that this isn't going to hurt them. As a matter of fact, Charles, if I had the resources, I'd be calling up York Arms today and ordering a custom firearm.
Well, considering the political situation in Maine, I would, if I were York Arms, I'd pick up and move to Wyoming or Montana or Texas.
Well, I mean, and what is it? It's Magpul, which is another big company that does magazines for firearms that are facing a big situation. Now, they're located, I believe, in the state of Colorado, but Colorado has just gone and started passing, like, draconian firearms restrictions.
Right next door is Wyoming.
Wyoming, that's right. It's, honestly, and why I think, believe Montana just today, I just saw this online, and this is kind of ancillary to this, but they had already passed a Firearms Freedom Act in Montana. But today, a committee of the Montana legislature just passed out a NDAA ban bill. They are going to nullify the National Defense Authorization Act's provisions about picking citizens up without a warrant.
Well,
and Montana is going to protect their citizenry.
And there are a number of sheriffs now. There are a number
hundreds,
of county sheriffs.
Hundreds of county sheriffs.
Over 400, approaching 500 rapidly.
Well, it means we're getting close to 20% of the sheriffs in the country, because there's only about 3,600 county sheriffs in the country. But we've got almost 500 now that are basically saying, not in my county, you're not.
That's right. And what they're saying is correct, that they understand the doctrine of interposition. Their job is to interpose between the higher magistrate and the citizen. The lower magistrate's job is to interpose between the higher magistrate and the citizen when a liberty issue is involved. And the fact is, what they've said is, we have sworn an oath to uphold the Constitution of the United States of America, which includes the Second Amendment, which guarantees the right. And remember, it doesn't give the right. It guarantees the right of individuals to keep and bear arms for the purpose of protecting life, liberty, and property. Period. And all that stuff, we did a reading here on a show, I don't know, about a month ago, maybe 6 weeks, where you did a breakdown on that, what the Second Amendment means.
Yes.
If you use the definitions provided for in the Webster's 1828, which is what the words meant when the founders wrote them. And that's exactly what the Second Amendment is from that basis. You know, this stuff about militias. Well, Barry, you and I know from the definitions given, we are members of the militia. We're members of the unorganized militia, certainly, but we are members of the militia. We are a home force designed to help defend our state, our county, our city, in our homes and families from intrusion on our rights, from invaders, from all kinds of different things. And all the talk that you're hearing now online from the talking heads about, oh gosh, you guys actually think you're going to be able to protect yourself from this and that and another thing. Well, guess what? The government thinks so too. Otherwise, there would not be this effort to ridicule those of us who understand that particular provision. That's exactly what that is. You know, one thing that people can't stand is to be ridiculed. And that's one thing that you're beginning to see is that conservatives are doing correctly, is using ridicule. Now, all you have to do is watch Saturday Night Live. They ridicule the right incessantly. Well, they don't take it very well when it goes back the other direction. And in fact, they attempt to defend themselves from that. And that's exactly what's going on at the federal level. They're attempting to ridicule the idea that we could protect ourselves. You know, basically what they're saying to us, we could crush you if we wanted to, and we will if you make us. That it's not even particularly well veiled.
No, it's not. And the thought occurred to me, Chuck, as I looked at the last one I saw, which was about 1.9 billion rounds that was being ordered by Homeland Security, that if you do the math, that's about a 6-round load in a revolver for every man, woman, and child in America.
Yeah.
1.9 billion rounds, you could load up over 300 million 6-round revolvers at every man, woman, and child in America.
Well, you know, and also, you know, these guys are talking about, well, they're ridiculing us on the basis that we oppose registration. And yet, on the same Godfather Politics, if you look down, if you're looking at the front page, mm-hmm. Mexico asked U.S. to provide gun registration info for all border states. Under what circumstances, if I lived in a border state, would the federal government be giving my personal information to a government official in Mexico?
Well, I guess that may be because the federal government's not supplying Mexicans with the firearms directly, so we're just going to let them know where they are so they can come and take them.
Yes, well, that's a mistake.
I think it's a huge mistake.
Especially in places like Arizona and Texas. I don't think that would be put up with well.
Well, I think it's interesting, too, because, you know, and we've talked about this on other programs, where you have news media outlets who want to publish the names and addresses of everybody who has a firearm in their home. And if you remember, the vast majority of folks, and even we said about it, gotten an uproar about that issue, about the, you know, invasion of privacy, etc. But honestly, Charles, the people who should be the most upset about that are the people whose homes aren't listed in that list.
That's right.
Because basically what they've done is they've given a criminal an easy map of who doesn't own a firearm so that that target will be much easier to attack than one who might fire back.
Here's one of the problems, though, they ran into, Barry. They had already caught people within a week who were using that newspaper article to target homes to steal guns.
Yes.
In burglaries. Wait until you're not home.
That's it.
And walking in and stealing it. So that's one of the problems. You know, there's a somebody once in a state, I think it may have been in New York, or it was a state that had very restrictive gun laws. This fella had a problem with his neighbor. And he basically said, he put a sign in his yard that said, you might want to start with the guy next door because he's an anti-gun advocate. That's all the sign said. Oh, this neighbor came unglued. You're making me a target. Target of what? I mean, you're a gun-free zone. That should be complete safety.
Exactly. According to you, it's complete safety.
So, look, this whole gun-free zone thing brings to mind something that I ran across. It's now appearing, and this isn't just coming out of some random weirdo website, you know, some... you know, no name, something somebody made up. This is out of CBS Channel 2 in New York City.
Okay.
There's a report from people who supposedly know inside the Sandy Hook investigation. And the headline is, Sandy Hook Elementary School gunman Adam Lanza was obsessed with Norwegian killer. Now, we're talking about the killer he was obsessed with was this Anders Breivik, who shot 77 people. In Norway at a youth camp.
A youth camp, yes.
And other places. It wasn't just there. And who was very proud of what he did. He was a white supremacist, partly. He was a very odd chap. And it turns out that apparently Adam Lanza was obsessed with this private character, and he wanted to shoot more people than Breivik had. So he wanted his number to be higher than 77. So where did he go? Apparently, he picked Sandy Hook Elementary at random because it was close, and he knew it was a gun-free zone and an easy target. And he figured he'd be able to kill more than 77 people in there easily. And the fact is that it's turning out that Adam Lanza, at least according to sources, was sort of obsessed with the number of these shoot-'em-up games. Extremely violent. They're not releasing the names of any of these things. Well, we've talked about them before on our show. What's the one the military one where you shoot and shoot and shoot and shoot.
Call of Duty.
Call of Duty.
Yes.
Call of Duty was apparently one of them. And he apparently had a big game center in his basement.
Yes.
You know, like a 100-inch screen TV with a full surround sound that he did nothing but sit around and play these games on. Well, it's becoming clear that the guns weren't the problem. And the ease of access to the guns weren't the problem because it wasn't all that easy. He had to kill his mother and steal her guns. The fact is, the problem was that this kid was unstable, and he wanted his score to be higher than the champ.
Well, of course, because that's the goal of all video games, Chuck.
That's exactly
is
right.
Is to be the high score. I mean, when you go, I remember growing up as a kid going to the arcades.
Exactly.
This was before you could sit in your living room or in your bedroom and do the same thing. But I remember going to the arcades. Of course, you weren't there just because you wanted to play the game. And, oh, that's nice. Oh, I died. Oh, I'm done. Okay, my turn's over with my quarters used up. No, it was, what's my score? Oh, okay. Oh, I can only, 5,000 more points and I am the winner.
That's right. I'll have my name will be number one on that list.
Or your initials, depending on how much they let you do.
Yeah, those are your initials. They had limited memory back then.
That's right.
But, yeah. Now, see, I played pinball, so. We didn't have that option. You just played and played. You got your buddies together. But the fact is, these kids get together. They have, with the internet the way it is. Now, again, I'm not preaching about the fact that technology is bad. Barry, you know me. I'm kind of a techno guy. I like the things that work.
If you weren't a techno guy, we wouldn't be doing this program.
And I like to know how things work and why they work. And I like to have things that work really well. And the fact is, I have no problem with technology. Being a reform person, it's one of those things that being a reform thinker, it's every piece, everything that man does is capable of being reformed for the use of God. Okay. So what I'm saying though is this kid could sit in his basement yes. on a couch,
right?
Interactively playing this game,
right?
Killing all his opponents so he could be number one on that list.
That's it.
You know, this isn't even the same as sitting in the room playing it by yourself. This is playing interactively, which adds an entirely different element to it.
Mm-hmm.
That competitive, that thing where I want to be number one and I want my name on the list. This kid apparently confused, Adam Lanza confused real life
uh-huh.
with his video game. He wanted to be the guy at the top of the list. Of scorers.
Sounds like it.
And, but basically, he chose, here's a quote from the article. Sources indicated that Lanza wanted to top Breivik's death toll and chose Sandy Hook because it was an easy target with a large cluster of people. Lanza may have intended to kill more, but was interrupted when police responded to the shooting. What happens to these guys when the cops come? In virtually every case, or somebody with a concealed carry permit pulls a weapon and draws on them.
They usually end up taking their own lives.
That's what he did. He shot himself.
Yeah, because then the game's no longer fun.
Now, the fact is, there's still a whole lot of stuff that isn't coming out. And you and I have talked about this. And the reason it's not coming out is the fact that when it does come out, there's going to be proof positive that the AR-15 or the whatever it was, it wasn't an AR-15.
It's a Bushmaster 223.
Bushmaster 223 wasn't used.
That was in the trunk of his car.
It was in the trunk of his car.
We reported on that weeks ago.
Yeah.
But then all of a sudden everybody was like, oh, no, he had it.
Now
we're coming back around, and now that they're starting to release official reports, the investigative reports, it's very clear. He didn't use it.
He didn't use the Bushmaster. He used the pistols.
Yes.
And for obvious reasons. If you think about it. A, much easier to wield in the situation where he was. It's easier to use. Why take a rifle when you can take a pistol in and bang, 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 bang. And with a rifle, you're constantly having to sweep the horizon and that kind of thing. No, the fact is that he made his choice to use those pistols, and I believe that's what he killed his mother with. We're not going to see the autopsy evidence until they know for sure that anything in Congress to ban specific kinds of weapons has passed, and it's very rapidly passing with stories like this coming out, because it's becoming obvious, again, that this is a one-off. This is not something that that's going to be happening over and over and over. Although, of course, we've had copycats, as we always do, when one of these guys does this. And in fact, it's turning out that Lanza was a copycat.
That's not surprising whatsoever.
No, it's the pieces of the puzzle are beginning to come together, and it's defeating the meme that's out there about what had has what went on in Newtown. As we again, let's not wrench our arms out of the sockets to pat ourselves on the back, but we told you so.
Well, Chuck, that's the whole point of thinking through a matter and not letting the media drive you to a conclusion. It's called using common sense. Stopping and looking at the evidence as it's there, not as someone is trying to spin it to you. See, because that's what the media wanted to do. There was already an agenda created that guns are bad, and that responsible people don't have guns, and that if we allow free gunner ownership, bad things happen to innocent people. That's the meme. However, when you start taking a look at the evidence, we find out the gun, as I've stated before on this program, and you have too, the gun is an inanimate object. It is a tool that can be used depending upon your worldview, either for good and for useful purposes, whether it be for hunting, for defense and protection, or for the shooting sports, or it can be used for evil. Crime, mischief, mayhem, murder. But it's a tool. A hammer isn't bad because somebody picked it up and swung it and hit somebody in the head. It's still useful for driving a nail. And the vast majority of people who pick up a hammer use it for driving a nail. It's the people who have something else going on that creates a dysfunction in them that takes a tool that's meant for a useful purpose and perverts it to a tool meant for a purpose that is malignant. Adam Lanza was a malignancy.
Yes. It's sad to put it that way because he was a sick individual.
He needed help.
He needed help.
But his help, you know, Chuck, the picture wouldn't have changed.
No.
Had his mom been a champion knitter and had knitting needles all over her house, my guess is he would have figured out, okay, I wonder what kind of score I can get by going in and stabbing people with knitting needles.
Yeah, well, like the guy in China.
Exactly.
That happened contemporarily.
That used a knife instead of a gun.
And he stabbed or slashed 35 people and little kids in a school in China.
Yeah. See, again, we run into the situation that ultimately, Adam Lanza's mother, may she rest in peace, had a great deal of responsibility, not in regard so much to her guns and whether or not she had a firearm or stored it properly, but it was in the idea of having a son who had emotional and mental issues and allowing him to feed his psychoses with violent imagery and death and mayhem on a regular basis.
But she had a responsibility. Okay, we'll go into this. She had a responsibility to make sure that didn't happen. But what are the quote-unquote societal experts, the experts in this field, telling her? It's good for him.
Oh, yeah. You need to let him express himself.
He needs to express himself with these games. And this is a form of social outlet for him because undoubtedly he was playing interactively, which means that he was interacting with people on the internet, I guess, killing them.
Chuck, let's just look at this from a personal dynamic situation. Let's step away from the video games for a minute. If I'm doing something or engaged in an activity and I'm all by myself, and something goes wrong, whose fault is it? It's mine.
It's yours, yeah.
But if I'm engaged in an interactive activity and something goes wrong, what's my first thought?
The other guys did it to me.
How dare you, or why did you do that? Couldn't have been me. We see with Adam Lanza, if he wasn't playing interactively, everything he did was all his fault. But when he had other people, well, they're trying to kill me, so I must kill them.
Mm-hmm.
Well, for a child who has mental issues, you extend that out and you look around. Well, they're going to come up and they're going to be trying to kill me, so I've got to go do something about it.
Well, you know, I'm not excusing her, by the
no,
way.
No, no, I'm not.
You understand that?
Oh no, I do that.
But
yes,
she's a victim of the same people who then turned around and are now disparaging her. Now, remember the early reports were that she was trying to have him committed?
Yes.
And then everybody came out and said, no, no, she wasn't. Well, it turns out now that, yes, she was.
Yes, she was.
And the court system was dragging its feet. So, let's talk about that for a minute. She was doing her best as a parent, saying, I've got a problem that I cannot solve.
Exactly.
We need to get this young man into some place where he might be able to get some professional help. Because sometimes these people, once they become this damaged, or they have maybe a biochemical issue or a true brain problem, they can't be in society. You know, sometimes the big thing is to always get them out of the institution. And they'll say, as long as they take their meds, they're fine. Well, how many of these guys have come out, taken their meds faithfully for a while, but they say, oh, it makes me fuzzy headed, or it makes me do this, or it makes me do that, and I can't stand it. And a lot of these drugs are very powerful, and they do have very potent side effects. So they come out of these situations and they say, I'm going to stop taking my drugs. The next thing you know, they've started slashing people in the park, or they found a gun someplace that's been chucked after a crime, or whatever, and they start using it because they are not right. Should they be out at all? If they can't go to a place where they can be monitored and taking their drugs and have their system monitored to see if it's in their system or not, why should they be out of the loony bin? Let's talk about mental health reform. Why are we pushing these people who shouldn't be out of a mental health facility out of one, and why are we not letting the ones in who should be in? Now, I'm not talking about this on the federal level. I want to avoid this like the plague on the federal level,
yes,
because
of
that program I did a few weeks ago where I talked about the fact that if you read 1984 or the Gulag Archipelago, or you understand everything about how Nazi Germany worked, anybody who was in opposition to the regime
was mentally ill.
And that's why the feds want control of this.
Of course they do.
It doesn't need to be done at the federal level. It needs to be done at the local level. A county judge should be able to take a look at someone who is insane and say, for this, your safety and the safety of society, you have to be incarcerated until such time as they've straightened you out to the point where you can be out.
Yep, exactly.
And if that never happens, and if you can't take your drugs, back in you go right now.
And that would be a great thing if you could get them to do that. But what we have now is an entire industry built around the idea that, well, if you just don't feel good about yourself, then you might have a latent mental illness, and we could fix that. Well, you just go into all this counseling and take all of these drugs, and we haven't even begun to talk about the role of behavior-modifying prescription medications, which I believe Lonzo was also on.
Yes, he was.
From the school, when he went to school there.
Which is why one of the reasons mom homeschooled.
Part of the reason why she pulled him out in homeschool.
Because of what it was doing to him. This is one of the main problems. You know, this is getting kind of far afield from where we started. But one of the things that's going on in schools is very often people who have no business prescribing drugs, psychologists, school counselors, are prescribing or doing rubber stamp, getting doctors a rubber stamp prescriptions for things like Ritalin, which is a potent essentially it works different ways in different people, and it works differently in children than adults, which should tell you something. That's not something that should be messed with, because it's a big problem that nobody's talking about. Kids who are prescribe that for quote-unquote hyperactivity. In other words, female teachers who don't like dealing with boys in the classroom because they're hyper-energetic and they get into trouble when they do stuff because that's what boys do.
That's what boys do.
Are coming out addicted to Ritalin because it is addictive. And it creates major problems in adults when people are addicted to Ritalin.
It does.
Major problems in adults. So, you know, what are you going to do about this? Well, here's the way they want to handle this. They don't want to deal with the mental health end. They want to get the guns out of people's hands.
Yeah, because if you just take the tool away, then nobody can do anything, right?
You know, so because there are drunk drivers, we need to take cars away. Cars can't be handled responsibility because there's nothing to stop you from getting drunk and getting behind the wheel of your car. Right?
Well, other responsible people saying, no, I don't think you should be doing
and
that.
That's, and therein lies the rub, because this is about personal responsibility. It's all about personal responsibility. You know, I grew up in a house with guns in it, and the first thing my father taught me, I can remember this. There's no such thing as an unloaded gun.
Amen.
I never point a gun at anything you don't intend to shoot.
Exactly.
And if you do shoot it, kill it.
See, now, we had slightly modified rules, which we taught our kids from the moment they were. See, we never let our children, even when they were little, play with toy guns in such a way. What we did is we had them, before they could ever even remotely get any kind of a toy firearm of any type, whether it's little G.I. Joe firearms or anything else, up to cap guns, they had to know, recite, memorize, and live by what we called the gun rules. And the first rule was, number one, you know, the preliminary, that always assume a gun is loaded. Okay, always point your weapon in a safe direction. Never put your finger on the trigger until you're ready to fire. And never fire at anything that is human. We won't let them play shooter games.
Yeah, that's not a bad thing.
Or humanoid. We even kept them from playing like some of the games where it's space aliens. If the space alien had a humanoid figure, it's no go. Two arms, two legs, a head. Nope, you can't shoot at.
Yeah, that's it's a blob, maybe.
Yeah, well, or a machine. But the point is, if it's shaped like a figure of a person, that is a way to train somebody to be okay to pull the trigger. Now it's interesting because. I don't know how many of our listeners have seen this or not, but there's something floating around Facebook right now, and I haven't had a chance to totally verify this yet, although I'd love to, that there's a manufacturer of shooting silhouettes who have been asked to do what are called non-traditional target imagery for government purposes. Non-traditional target imagery includes pregnant women holding a gun.
Yes.
Children holding guns. Elderly people holding guns. Supposedly in the respect of getting military and law enforcement officials past the mental reservation of using lethal force against someone who doesn't appear to be a criminal. Now, Chuck, I want to find that out, and ladies and gentlemen, I'll be researching this, and we'll talk more about this next week. But if this is true, that these companies are being asked to manufacture these shooting silhouettes, paper targets, basically, Chuck.
All right, here's a story. Cops request, quote-unquote, realistic targets of pregnant women and children.
Okay. Now, the reason why I hesitated on this is because the first place I saw this coming from was InfoWars with Alex Jones. And so I'm always cautious about the veracity of things coming from that particular source. So we will have to, again, I want to take some time, but I just as we were sitting here doing this program, I'm looking across some of my information coming in, and I'm starting to see this more and more. So I really want to get a handle on that and verify it. So, ladies and gentlemen, if any of you know for certain, at any sources other than InfoWars.
Well, how about Reason.com?
That actually would be a better source, as long as they're not sourcing back to Alex Jones.
I'll send you the URL, and we'll post it on our website, because there is something on here. We haven't had time to go over it. And so we'll maybe report more on it on Monday when we have more time, because right now, time is something we no longer have. So we'll talk about this a little more. If we find out anything more on Monday, join us then for another Principles and Policies.